Back here on the Mighty 690, and it is time for our chat with State Senator Virgil Peck, who joins us in studio this morning. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, James. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today and the opportunity to sort of honor veterans tomorrow coming up.
Well, you know, it is, we're right here on another Veterans Day, and, I mean, we had a great opportunity here, especially in Independence, with the Eyes of Freedom coming in on Wednesday. I know we had the procession, you know, from Caney over to Independence, and then kind of the opening ceremony, and now a great opportunity here as we get into the weekend for people to actually see this really cool traveling display.
It absolutely is, and I would encourage the listeners, James, to go to Independence, even if you have to drive a little ways, to see this. Yes, they're honoring the Lima Company from Ohio. They lost a lot of their military, some 21 Marines, if I remember correctly. And then there was also a corpsman that passed away. But it also honors all veterans. It's a memorial not just to those Ohio veterans, but to all veterans. And so I would encourage everyone to be there. The procession was, that was a really cool thing. I was part of that. I actually was at the end of my road near Havana, and just there by myself and my wife with a flag, and then we traveled up to Independence and got into that procession, if you will. I stood on the side of the road, and I had a lady actually stop who had driven by, saw me standing there with the flag. She said, I got to get out and find out what's going on. So I had a chance to explain to her. Her husband was a military veteran, disabled. So cool things. So check out the Eyes of Freedom. It's a really good thing because it's only stop in Kansas. So far, it's been to like 35 states, is Independence, Kansas, Montgomery County, Kansas.
That is really cool. And I mean, you got the chance to have the opening ceremony and then also to see the actual exhibit. I understand it's several paintings and they've got a sculpture and all that sort of thing.
They do. They have the boots of the combat guys that lost their life. And there's one of them, Youngblood was the last name. I looked in that guy's eyes in the painting, and it just looks so natural, like you're sitting there across the table talking to someone. So it's moving, it's touching, and I thought today I would just do a few things to say some things about our military veterans. Also, James, a lot of people don't know the history of our national anthem, and so I thought, well, I would spend a little bit of time honoring our veterans and talking about our national anthem. Of course, the first military veterans of the United States would have to be the colonists who fought in the Revolutionary War for our independence. The Revolutionary War was a long time ago. It concluded with a peace treaty in 1783. Now, that peace treaty was something that ended the war, but the British Crown never really got over their defeat at the hands of what they considered to be an untrained and unskilled army. So as a result, there was constant tensions between the Crown and the United States, which led to the War of 1812. Now, the War of 1812, named for 1 year, but it actually lasted for 32 months, was an especially vicious war, and James was often referred to as the Second War of Independence. The British Crown was determined in that fight to show their military power, avenge their defeat in the Revolutionary War, and regain control of the colonies. Now, in the middle of the 32-month war, a lady named Mary Pinkersgill, she was a 37-year-old widow, she was contracted to sew two flags for Fort McHenry in Baltimore, Maryland, which Baltimore, Maryland at that time was the nation's third largest population center. Now, these were not just regular, ordinary, small flags. There were two flags. One was 17 feet by 25 feet. It was referred to as the storm flag because it was used during inclement weather. And then the other was much larger at 30 feet by 42 feet, and it was called the Garrison flag. Now, helping Pinkersgill with the flags was her teenage daughter, a couple of nieces, and then an indentured servant. And interestingly, it took the five women 7 weeks to finish those two flags. Now, I mentioned those because we're going to get back to those in just a little bit, so I'd ask listeners to remember those flags and their size. But getting back to the War of 1812, the British war machine greatly outnumbered and outgunned the young U.S. Army and Navy, so defeat of the U.S. military seemed all but certain. On August the 24th, 1814, British troops marched into Washington, D.C. and set fire to the White House and the Capitol building, nearly destroying both of them. Now, at that point, America's future seemed more uncertain than ever as the British set their sights on Baltimore, Maryland, a vital seaport. As the British left Washington, headed to Baltimore, on their way, they captured several leading citizens, which had just been civilians, and they made them prisoners of war. Among the captured was a man named Dr. William Beans, an elderly and popular physician at that time. And Dr. Beans had a friend, a young lawyer, and an amateur poet named Francis Key. That brings us into the next part of developing this. In early September of 2014, Key and Colonel John Skinner, who was the American agent for prisoners of war, rowed out to the British ships at the mouth of the Patapsco River outside Baltimore to seek the release of Dr. Beans and the other prisoners that the British were holding. Actually, the meeting with the British officers went well, and the prisoner release was agreed to. However, when it came time for Key and his companions to get in their boats and paddle back home, the British wouldn't let them leave. As a matter of fact, they tethered their boats to the British ship because the Americans had been on the ship with the Brits during the negotiations. They had heard much of the details of the British plans for their attack on Baltimore, so the British couldn't let them go. The British had tried, by the way, to take Fort McHenry by ground, but it failed. The fort was too well fortified. The Americans fought hard. And so the British decided, okay, we'll take it by water. British ships maneuvered into place, got in position, and their plan was to blast the daylights out of Fort McHenry, and they were going to be a couple miles away from the fort, lobbing bombs there. And the British felt once they captured the fort, they could then raid Baltimore, just as they had done in Washington, D.C., and, of course, since Key and the others knew all of that, the British wouldn't let them go, and so they kept them there. Now, early in the morning on September the 13th, 1814, British warships began firing bombs and rockets at Fort McHenry. The bombardment continued for 25 hours as the British fired all that they had. Some 1,600 bombshells and over 700 rockets were fired at the American fort. Key wrote, he was a poet, he wrote down, quote, "It seemed as though Mother Earth had opened and was vomiting shot and shell in a sheet of fire and brimstone," end quote. And then as the night sky set in, Key could see the red erupting in the sky from the bombs. And from a distance away in anguish, Key and the other Americans witnessed a 25-hour bombardment of Fort McHenry. Where the bombing stopped, it was pitch black dark. It was nighttime, so they couldn't see anything at all. They spent a sleepless night wondering what was the result of the British shelling of Fort McHenry. Key rose early in the morning. Actually, he didn't really get any sleep, but he got up well before daylight, straining to see the fort in the darkness, but just couldn't. Too dark. I can imagine, James, Key straining in the darkness with his hand over on his forehead, looking to see if he could learn the fate of Fort McHenry. What was the outcome? Could anyone see? Could anyone tell what had happened? Had the British won? Was a British flag now flying over the fort? Not knowing, Key, a poet, pulled a letter from his pocket and on the envelope, jotted down by candlelight, just a few words. He wrote, "Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?" And that was all he wrote. And then as dawn neared on that September morning, Key squinted through the smoke and gloom, and he prepared himself to see his fears fulfilled, the British flag flying over Fort McHenry. However, standing, hoping against hope, waiting, and then as the morning light slowly arrived, Key saw there was a flag flying. But wait, what was it? Could it be? Yes. Why, yes. Key could see the smaller American flag had been lowered and the large 30 feet by 42 garrison flag was hoisted in its place. Key, just as many American military veterans have since that time, saw the stars and stripes and took courage and strength to engage in what was ahead of them. The British ships were withdrawing, and Key realized that the United States had survived the battle and stopped the powerful enemy advance. Upon getting back into Baltimore, Francis Scott Key finished his poem. The final product contains four verses. Verse 1, very familiar to all of us as Americans, ends by asking, "Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?" As we celebrate our veterans and their service to the United States military, it is important to thank them, and we do. But it's also important to understand that in 2023, it is on us. Are we willing to engage in the culture war so that the United States remains free from a socialist woke agenda and destruction? Will we take a stand for current and future generations? James, our veterans have handed us a great nation. It's not perfect. No one would say it is. But it is great, nevertheless. However, now it's on us. Key concluded his four-verse poem by writing the words, "Then conquer we must, when our cause it is just. And this be our motto, in God is our trust." Interestingly, it was not until some 142 years later, in 1956, that the 84th Congress officially adopted "In God We Trust" as our national motto. Then 12 years ago from this year, following a certain political speech, which I won't get into, but some question whether that was indeed the motto of the United States. So on November the 2nd, 2011, the U.S. House of Representatives voted 396-9 to reaffirm the U.S. national motto is indeed "In God We Trust." Faith has always been important to our country, important to Americans, important to me. One of the greatest presidents in my way of thinking, Ronald Reagan, said, "If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under." James, as I wrap up with this little bit of a history lesson, I want to get back again to our veterans and to thank our veterans for their service in the United States Armed Forces. No matter if they fought in a foreign country or they were based here in the United States, I appreciate their service. Veterans, I salute you this morning.
And I appreciate you bringing that story to life, because I think that's one that we definitely need to hear and remember, because it is so important, you know, when we hear that song, you know, before a ball game or whatever it may be. And I understand you have a special guest here this morning to bring this even more to life.
I did bring with me this morning my high school sweetheart, which is also my wife of now 46 years. But Tamara has been blessed with a great singing voice, and I have asked her, and I ask you if it would be all right, but I ask her to sing the first and fourth verse of our national anthem. The first verse, everyone knows, but I thought it would be well on this Veterans Day weekend week to realize there are additional verses, and our country was founded on the words of verse 4.
"Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? Oh, thus be it ever, when free men shall stand between their loved home and the war's desolation. Blessed with victory and peace, may the half-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must, when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. And the Star-Spangled Banner in triumph shall wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
James, I appreciate you allowing us to be on the radio this morning, allowing me to give a little bit of a history lesson and for Tamara to sing. And again, veterans, veterans families, thank you so much for your service to the United States. It means a lot to me.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Peck, thank you so much for coming on the program here this morning, and a really important thing here on Veterans Day as we get closer here. This is a very important day that we have coming up tomorrow, and hope everyone can take the appropriate time to remember all the sacrifices that have been given to keep America free.
Absolutely. God bless you.
All right. Thank you, Virgil, and I look forward to chatting again here next month.
We'll talk to you then. Appreciate it.